Blog Talk Radio.
Radio, and I'm your host, Red Snapper, and we got this good, fantastic show for you this evening, because we got two beautiful women that's going to be on the show this evening. Miss Electa Rome Parks is here. She's going to spend some time with us today. We got Troy Fields coming right after her, so we just want you to sit back and relax that as we bring you Word Sexy Radio. Bar One, so low, bringing it to you this evening, that soulful jazz sound, as we bring you right in. We're going to let our women talk to you, and you're going to have your questions. If you got anything to say, you want to call in, the number is 917-889-8206. This is Word Sexy Radio. This is Grown Folks Radio, and we also got the chat room open as well, if you want to get in there. And if I have to put the link out, let me know, and we'll get it out there for you, but we should be able to get you. Thank you all for calling in and tuning in, and this is Word Sexy Radio. We're going to bring it on, too, and just want to let you know, I got that book signing coming up October 3rd. I'm going to be doing it right here in Kansas City at Nisi's Restaurant and Lounge. We're going to be having that there. It's going to be a two-hour event as well. Afterwards, we'll be doing some things, but I just want to get that in, let you know about that as well. But I'm going to get right into it. I'm going to go ahead and get my girls here on the line and let them both say who they are, and then we're going to start into Electa. So go ahead, Electa, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Electa Rome Parks, and I am calling from Atlanta, Georgia.
And we thank you for calling in, and that sexy voice is back. Haven't had it in a while, and we're glad you're here. And Troy Fields, let's get you to state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, I'm Troy Fields, and I'm calling from Boca Raton, Florida.
All right. Well, we're glad to have you both on the show, and I'm hoping my co-host will come in pretty soon. And when he does, I'll scold him when he gets here. But right now we're going to go ahead and get started, and because I know that you ladies are busy and you have things you want to do. This is a two-hour show, but doesn't mean you have to be here the whole time. We'll be doing our thing. But we're going to start with Electa. Electa, okay. What's going on with you? I haven't talked to you in a minute. How's everything?
I know. Everything is going well. It's been a lot. I always say the last couple of years have been kind of a year of transformation for me. But bottom line, I'm still following my passion. I'm still writing. I'm still trying to get my works and my voice out there. But definitely the last few years have been years of transformation.
Okay. All right. So what are you working on now? Can you keep, or is that a secret?
No, it's not a secret. You know, I'm always working on something. Right now, I'm to be honest, and you know, I always try to keep it real, so to speak. Right now, I'm kind of, as an author, I'm kind of in limbo. You know, over the years, I've been doing this for quite a while. You know, I actually started out in 2001 as a self-published author and got picked up in 2003 by one of the major publishing houses. So over the years,
right.
since 2001, you know, I've been with a total of three different publishing houses. So right now I'm kind of in limbo, and I have a manuscript. It's called The Roommate. So whenever everything works its way clear, that will be the next novel that should drop. It's called The Roommate. But you're right, I can't say too much about it right now. This is not officially out there, and I don't officially have a date for when it's going to drop. But that's my as far as my forthcoming project. As far as
go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to cut y'all. Go ahead and finish.
Oh no! I was just going to say, as far as previous projects, my last two novels. One was my own novel, and the other was an anthology. Actually, came out last year. My last novel that came out last year in January was called When Baldwin Loved Brendan. And I also had an anthology that I was part of called Full Figured Six with Eric Pete.
Interesting. Full Figured Six, okay. So which one do you want to talk about first? Because, you know, we definitely want to include everyone when we talk and do books. And I'm glad that that's something that's out there. And I'm laughing because it's something that's needed, you know, because a lot of times when people write about books, the women are always the small video vixen or something like that, you know, and they're light-skinned and they got the long hair and they have Cherokee or something. And then when it's a thought or a bad person, they're dark women and or their hair is, you know, whatever. And, you know, I just wanted, we want to kind of get into that a little bit because I know you had asked earlier about a topic. So one of the topics I wanted to kind of bring up, And Troy, you can get in this too if you want to, because we're gonna give you a chance to introduce yourself as well. But just wanted to that subject matter as well. But first, before I do that, because I'm gonna ask you both to kind of give me what do you think about the thing that's going on with these books? And like I said, everybody's making their women the Harion is always someone that's this light skin or whatever, and then the dark skin woman is the one that's the hoe or the one that's out here that's on crack or whatever. I want you to kind of marinate on that for a second. But Troy, let's get you to introduce yourself real quick, because I want to do both of you at the same time, and then I'm going to give Electa some time because I know she has to go. But Troy, go ahead and introduce yourself, and then that way you both are introduced, and then we can just kind of go from there.
Okay, I'm Troy Fields. 38. I'm a native Floridian. I've lived in South Florida all my life. However, I do have Bahamian roots, and I am the author of Wife Tales. So Wife Tales is a series of shorts, and it's basically about women, and it's not those light-skinned, you know, video vixen women. That's why I was juggling.
Well, that's good. So this is good for the subject then. Go ahead. Okay,
yeah,
let's just do this.
I'm fairly new to the game.
You're new to the game? How long have you been writing?
I've been writing all my life. Published really since just April, May of this year. So fairly recently.
Okay, good. Okay, well, let me say this to both of you, because I know Electa hears this a lot, you know, how a lot of people will come on and say, I've been writing since I was 5 years old, and I knew I wanted to be an author when I was 7, and, you know, I mean, it just I don't know how people can figure that out at that early of an age. I guess you can, but to me, it just
it trips me out
how some people do that. I guess you can. When did you first notice that you was going to be an author, Electa?
Well, Mel, I won't say that I knew. I won't say that I knew I wanted to be an author, but I can definitely say that from a very, very early age that I knew I had a love of writing and I had a love of reading. And so, of course, that becomes a writer. Yeah, very, very early on, I mean, I fell in love with books and reading, and I tell this story, I'm sure you've heard it many times, but growing up and still even now, you know, I'm quiet, you know, and growing up I was very shy. And so books were my
No, not really. Not you.
Now I say I'm quiet. I think I grew out of the shyness, but now I'm still pretty quiet and laid back. But those books were my escapes, and writing was my escape. You know, I my head was always buried in a book. Or I was always, you know, writing in my diary in the evenings, or as I got older, I had a journal. I was always penning, like, little poems or little short stories. So that has been something that has been with me for as long as I can remember. So I can truly say, it's not just a cliche, when I say that I have always, since I could read and write, have had a love and a passion for those two things. Now, as far as the author aspect of it, you know, when I was growing up, a lot of the authors that were African-American authors, you know, I could not really relate to them because what I was reading were what is now, you know, classics or whatever. And so I wasn't reading a lot of contemporary fiction by African-Americans. So they always say you kind of become what you see. And so I really always saw the writing aspect, even though I was doing it, you know, I was writing and doing all that for myself and my family members. I never saw it as a career. So it never, you know, crossed my mind when I went off to college and was a business major, a marketing major, to even do, you know, creative writing or anything along those lines to even have a career as a writer. But then later, and I always go back to my example of when Terry McMillan hit the scene and her book, especially Disappearing Acts, when that first came out, that was the one that did it for me. And I just got all caught up in the story. It was a contemporary story. I could see my friends and family, and you know, I could just see somebody in every role of every character in the book. And then when she got so successful and the movies started coming, yeah, I think that was the first time when I finally thought that, hey, maybe I can do this. Maybe I can do this as more than just a hobby. And that was kind of what made the light bulb go off, so to speak.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good. So how was it for you, Troy? What inspired you to go ahead and stop writing just for yourself and wanting others to read your work?
I was pushed. I was pushed. I had always had it in me. I'd always had this love of you know, words. I was raised by my grandparents, so they always instilled in me that words had power, and you needed to be able to use words. So I use words very well. And I'm more of the behind-the-scenes person. I don't like to be seen. I grew up the awkward girl, the nerd, the geek, the tomboy who, the smarty pants. So, you know, I always stayed in the book, and I always loved, like, the classics, you know, Edgar Allan Poe and, you know, I always had, like, a love for all of the classics.
Charles Dickens was good, and Edgar Allan Poe was good, too. But that was some dark stuff there. So he was in the dark writing, in the classics of the dark side. Okay.
Well, but he had some things that were light. You know, you just have to, if you
well, you know, I always think of the
repertoire,
the
everybody
right,
always
yeah.
thinks the Raven, and that's all they know, you know.
Right, the Raven, or Pen and the Pillage and Lamar, or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but it's a lot to it, so you have to kind of delve into that.
I'm saying it wrong. Yeah. But, you know, it's good that people that. And I wish we kind of wrote a little bit more kind of like that now, because you know the literary world is now fluctuated now with a lot of urban fiction and stuff, which is not a problem, but a lot of people are using the effect that now they see themselves in books because the classics don't, they're not there. So they, I guess they feel if they see the streets or whatever that they're living, they feel that more that they can read about that. At least I say now they are reading, even if it is urban or whatever it could be. But the thing is, you know, I just wanted to get back to the question that I have for both of you. Is the thing is characters that we are picking now, and a lot of times, and I'm not dogging out or choosing the genre to dog out, because Alecta's been around, I know, for a while, and she's been in the game for, you know, and with mainstream publishing, you know, and I know that a lot of the mainstream are not, well, maybe they're opening up a little bit more now on certain things, but before, when you first got into it, it was a lot of nitpicking on what they really wanted you to do, right?
Oh, yeah. You could easily find yourself pigeonholed. Because I think I kind of, well, it was a few years down the line, but after the success of Terry McMillan and Kimberly Lawson Roby and authors of that nature, you know, they were looking for African-American female male authors. And so kind of once you get in there, whatever they pick up, they kind of want you to stay with that formula. So it, so you can kind of get pigeonholed, and it's kind of hard to break, you know, to break out of that genre or those genres. Because I know a lot of authors, that's why they really love self-publishing. Not only are they entrepreneurs, but they also, you know, don't have anyone looking over their back telling them, okay, this isn't going to work, or you can't write that, or add more sex scenes, or do this, or do that.
Right.
So yeah,
that's what I was
going to ask. Definitely, when I first started out, you could definitely get pigeonholed, and you want to, as a creative soul, be able to, you know, venture into wherever it may lead, so you really don't want to be put in that box, so to speak.
Exactly. So if you had to choose, and I guess you're in that choice right now, if you really wanted to, I assume you prefer to be under a mainstream publishing company, or would you rather have your own? Because you have the experience now that you can just basically just go out and just do the self-publishing thing and maybe get some authors under your wing or something, or maybe that's not your cup of tea. You might just want to just
so
be the
people,
author.
Yeah.
You know.
So many people have said exactly almost what you said, but, you know, when I first started out in 2001, God, it seems so long ago, but when I first started out as a self-published author.
That's only 13 years ago.
I know.
Years ago,
it's been a while, you're
right.
Yeah. It was a means to an end. You know, I made a conscious decision that I'm going to do this. I'm going to have a business plan. This is my goal. I'm going to have my marketing plan. And it was a means to an end to get that attention by an agent or a mainstream publishing house. So that was the goal, you know, from the very beginning. Because what I was finding was that being self-published, I had to wear too many hats. I mean, you have
right,
to do it
exactly.
all. And so it was
right.
taken away from the creativity because
creativity,
I was focusing
right.
too much on the business side. So to me, it was really a blessing to, you know, to get picked up by one of the houses. And even now, you know, I'm not saying that – I would kind of like to do kind of both, like maybe put a few out, you know, by myself. But I think as far as just long-term, I would like to stay with the publishing house because pretty much they're supposed to, you know, pretty much do all of those things for you so you can just focus on the writing aspect. And that's where the greatest joy comes to me is on the writing side as opposed to necessarily the business side.
Okay. What about you, Troy? Are you mainstream published or are you self-published, indie publishing, or what is your...
It's indie publishing. I'm with King Publishing Group, which is it's an independent publishing company, so I'm not totally self-published. And like Alecta said, it is a lot of work because you do find yourself wearing multiple hats. So not only am I writing, but I'm, you know, involved in all of the, you know, day-to-day business aspects of it for the most part because I have a huge vested interest other than just writing, you know. So it does sometimes take away from the creativity, but I would not trade it. It does allow me the freedom to basically write what it is I want to write. I can, you know, write what's in me and what's on my heart and not really get into the rut of someone telling me this is what you should be writing or this is what you need to write or this is the only thing that will be accepted if you write it. So, you know, I'm pretty happy in my situation.
Okay. Well, a couple of months ago, I guess, or maybe 6 months ago, James Patterson had put out something on Facebook saying that he felt that with everybody that's doing the self-publishing thing, it's hurting the literary industry to a point because people are putting out whatever they want to, and a lot sometimes it's garbage and sometimes it's good. But I'm going to ask Alexa, what does she think?
Wow.
I'm going to ask you, Troy. What do you think about that? Because I'm going to tell you, I mean, even before self-published, before it became interesting to do self-publishing, I mean, it was garbage coming out from the publishing houses. So what's the difference? Is it because, I mean, let me get your
opportunity to put out garbage.
Right, okay.
Well, more people have the opportunity to put their stuff out, and more people, I guess, just, you know, get that opportunity. It's not for everybody, and that's one of the things that I discover. People are putting out books, and it's, I just like, really? Sometimes I just, and it's not, you know, being overcritical, but just, you need to know what your strength is, and maybe this is just not it.
And, I mean, because you're saying everything out there. Now you're saying the side piece bitch, or, you know, I mean, you're seeing everything out there now. You're seeing
you really stock, are.
You're seeing whores galore. I mean, you're seeing my husband's side piece, or my father's sister. Yeah, I mean, you're seeing all kinds of stuff out there now that's being written, and everybody's got the scene in the back where they got the scene of a city, and it's a car and a woman on the front or something. I mean, why are we as African Americans? How do we get out of that mode where we can write and be just authors and write to everyone and not just a certain person? And I guess I could ask you this.
You want to answer that, Alexa?
When you write, I guess let me reframe the question. When you write, are you writing for everyone, or are you writing for a certain genre of folks? Because a lot of people, I think when you write those kind of books, urban, you know, they're particularly going for a person,
right,
a certain type
right.
of person.
Of course, I can only speak for myself. I mean,
and that's what I'm asking. Yours. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not right. I'm writing because I won't even say the story. I'm writing because a character has come to me and will not get out of my head and is talking to me and has something to be said and some lesson to teach, and that's when I start my story, when I have a character that's screaming at me to tell their story. So I'm not trying to write and follow anybody else's writing style. I'm not trying to write to please a certain group. You know, most of the books that I write, you know, I classify as more contemporary or women's fiction. There's always, you know, underlying themes like, you know, anything from domestic abuse to molestation to dysfunction. You know, it's always some theme without being preachy along those lines. But no, I don't ever sit down and say, well, let me see how many sex scenes I need to put in here. I need to put something, you know, this type of character. No, it's whatever character comes to me and their story needs to be told, and that's what I focus on. I'm not really concerned about, you know, what other authors are doing or what's popular at the time. You know, I'm just writing, you know, I want to please, of course, my readers so they can keep coming back and keep buying my books. But I think at this point, well, even from the, I mean, always, just from the very beginning, I've always written what I wanted to write and who speaks to me the loudest.
Okay. Troy, I guess I didn't even ask what genre you wrote in. What is your genre that you're writing in right now?
It's women's fiction, more contemporary, same as Alexa. I am purposely not trying to pigeonhole myself in the urban genre. While I am urban and some of the characters that I, you know, write about are urban, I try to use a wide variety of ethnicities so that it's not just one stream of people.
Right.
Because I don't want to, you know, be just pigeonholed into that, oh, you're just writing urban. And,
right.
and when I write, I basically try to write from a standpoint of realism so that it's relatable
right.
to, you
right.
know, to the people who I'm trying to reach. And through doing that, I found that I've connected with, you know, several of my readers. I've been, you know, asked to be a godparent to a baby because I've built relationship with one of my fans, and I've had another one of my readers, you know, share some really personal things that she was dealing with her daughter through reading my stuff because it's relatable. It's issues that, you know, we as women face in our relationships and, you know, whether it be as mothers, sisters, daughters, you know, cousins, you know, whatever. It can be, you know, understood across the board, no matter what.
So will we see a book explaining or something to the effect of, not necessarily from YouTube, but something that could come out about the Ray, this guy who's beating his wife, who makes she ends up marrying him after he beats the hell out of her in an elevator.
Right.
But anyway,
I mean,
you know, domestic violence. I know I think Alexa said that she writes.
Yeah, in fact, one of my very first book was actually focused on that theme, The Ties That Bind. That was the very first.
Uh-huh.
That was the
yeah,
baby.
I remember The Ties That Bind. Yes, I do remember that. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that's good that you guys are doing that. And even me in my writing, I've written a lot of erotica, but I'm not stuck on erotica. I have changed. I did some paranormal, and right now I'm doing a serial killer.
Oh, wow.
Thing. I'm getting into that because I think that to be an author, I think that you have to be able to convince your readers that you can write anything and be able to convince them enough that they think that you know how to do it, even though you've never done it, if that makes sense. Just like Stephen King, he writes about murder and all this crazy stuff. I don't think that he may have, but I don't think that he's murdered anyone, but he writes it so well that everybody believes the stories that he comes up with the craziness. And so
exactly.
I want to make mine believable in that aspect as well, to write about a serial killer that's out here doing some stuff. It might be a little sex in it, but I don't want to focus on the sexual piece.
Right.
I want it to be that it's, you know, this guy get in his mind of the serial killer and find out what is making him do this. You know, why is he killing these women or whatever, men or whoever he's killing.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was just thinking it's a little scary as well, because as writers, you know, we can get so deep, you know, it's within the characters, because I know one of my very, very popular characters from Diary of a Stalker, Pilar, I just really got all into her, you know, just she was just constantly with me, that basically after the second book, I had to, like, take a little break because it was like, okay, this is getting a little scary.
Becoming that
this
person.
Is almost like,
right.
this is a real person.
Well, I'm hoping I don't become a serial killer because I don't want to do that. Right, yeah. But I do want to write it so
dark.
Believable. Yeah, I do want to write it believable, though, enough that that you can believe that this guy has a sickness and the reason why. But, you know, that's just testing my writing ability. That's what I want to do, because I want to write things that I have, you know, just to see where my writing can go, because I don't want to just be stuck with just writing one type of thing. Like you said, being in a bottleneck or what you say, pigeonholed into something, into one type of thing, and that's all people expect from you. Although a lot of people always say, oh, we want the erotica, we like the erotica. Well, I get tired of writing about sex. You can only write about so many positions and so many sex scenes and how many times somebody can take so many dicks. I'm sorry if I'm disrespecting you. But, you know, this is We're a Sexy Radio. We talk shit on here.
I kind of expected there were going to be some little words that came out.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. Like, I'm trying to be nice, okay, sweetheart? I'm trying not to disrespect. But, you know, it's just sometimes I have to express in that way. But the thing is I just wanted to be able to show that I can, for myself, if nothing else, my readers, even if I have to come in under a different pseudonym to write this serial killing thing, to maybe draw another type of audience. You know,
right.
I'm willing to do that because I
want
to do some vampire stuff. But how much vampire stuff is out there now? I mean, you can only write so much about that. And I miss, I can't even think of her name right now, the lady who passed away who used to write it all the time.
I can't think of her name either, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, she was very good at it. Yes.
Yeah.
And her dying, sudden death kind of took me a little bit because I wasn't expecting that to happen, but she was very good at it, and a lot of people didn't realize she was a black woman. And see, that's what I want. When people read my stuff, I don't want them to just know I'm black. I want them to understand that I'm an author. And then when they pick it up, they find out later, oh, he's a black guy. Just like Octavia Butler when she was writing her science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, nobody knows about her that much in the black world because people don't really read science fiction unless you're, like you said, nerdy or a bookworm, as we used to call them back when I was growing up.
I don't know if that's a true statement now. That might be a stereotype.
But you know what I'm saying.
Know.
Well, a lot of people, you know, they're like,
well, Star Trek and my science fiction. I was a classic textbook geeky nerd.
Right. Well, ain't nothing wrong with that. I was definitely the nerd in school. So, but when I was growing up, because I think I'm older than both of you, they called them bookworms back in the day when I was coming up. So.
Oh, yeah, that term is still, that's still out.
Yeah,
you know,
so it was the bookworm.
You know,
oh, you're a
nerd
bookworm. And, you're always this and that. And then with Revenge of the Nerd, all the nerd steam came out, and that's when it became big on the
cool,
nerd thing.
Cool to be a nerd.
Yeah, but I understand that. But see, a lot of people just don't get that there's other things. Like, a lot of people don't know that the author who wrote the Man Behind the Iron Mask and the whole Three Musketeers series is a black man. You know, they just see that, and they don't know that this guy is an African-American. He's half Haitian, half white, but he's still got black blood in him. And they don't even say that when they talk about him being a writer because he's French. So they don't want to say that he's a black man. But if you look him up, he's got an afro.
Well,
so,
you know,
I
don't see that as being a bad thing, though. I mean, do you
really
want to be
thing.
Classified as, you know, the black author? I mean, you just want your works to speak for themselves, to be able to translate
Absolutely.
And touch
right.
people of all
But it's
races.
Good to know that we have people that do that, though, that are of our color, that's writing other than black. Because to me, urban fiction, to me, when I think of urban fiction, and I'm not dogging that genre, those that are listening, please don't think that, because those that are doing that, that's your thing, that's fine. But to me, Donald Goins or Iceberg Slim, that's real urban fiction to me. Some of the stuff they got out now, I know it's new, but most of the stories are the same. The drug dealer goes to jail, he loses his woman, she takes over the business, or the other drug dealer takes over, he comes out of jail, he wants to get it back, and his woman. I mean, how many times do you write that? So, you know, that's just me. But anyway,
many.
Back to what we're
many.
Yeah. So you know, I mean, it's what it is, and there's an audience, just like for
yeah,
a lot of stuff, anything else, there's an audience.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. You know, there is an audience for pretty much everything that's out there, and that could be a good thing. I think that's a good thing. You know, I never really answered the question about the whole self-publishing and the James Patterson statement, but, you know, I pretty much agree with what Troy stated. That, you know, there are two sides to it. You know, it's good that there's something for everyone and more people are reading than ever before. And people, it is an easy way for people to have a voice. But then on the flip side, you know, just to be honest, there is a lot of garbage out there because, I mean, you can publish, on Amazon in 24 hours. I mean, you can literally put a book out there in 24 hours, you know, no thought for the craft, no thought for editing or anything. You know, I strive to be, you know, continuously learning the craft, to be a true author, growing with each new book that comes out. But let's be real, there are a lot of people that are out there that, you know, they like the attention. They, you know, they think, I don't know why, but they think it's a get-rich scheme, which I've never understood.
I didn't never get that one either. Yeah,
you know,
I don't know how they thought that.
Me neither.
But what I'm seeing is a lot of, and I'm not, please don't think that I'm picking on urban fiction, but I have to be honest where a lot of this is. A lot of people are changing, you know, they might have been incarcerated, some may or not, or they may have went through some things, and they're changing their product. They found that writing is something that they can do. So now they're getting other people that will do it for them. Instead of selling the drugs, they're selling books, and they're putting them out like water. Like you said, 24 hours, you got a book out.
Mm-hmm.
You get somebody to do a cover for you. It might be edited, it may not be. You know, it just depends, you know, and they put it out there, and it's out there, and people are buying it, and they're reading it, and they're thinking that's the street lingo, and they're going for it. So, I mean, I'm not mad at them. but the thing is what we're losing is what literary is really supposed to be. And to be able to put a product, I mean, even for yourself, if you're putting something out there, you want to be proud of what you put out there and how you're presenting yourself. So if you're putting something out there and you don't care how you present it and you just want to get paid, then, you know, maybe it is a get-rich scheme. I don't know where it is because I'm not rich.
Then you can fill me in on it then.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know where that's at.
Exactly, Troy. Because like I was saying, you know, you can tell, you know, I've been doing this since 2001. And it's been a whole bunch of lows. You know, I'm not saying there haven't been any highs, but there's been just as many lows. And so that right there, I mean, you can tell the people that really are passionate about writing, they're the ones that are still here, you know, so ever many years later. You know, they're not going to just give it up because, oh, I didn't make, you know, this much money, or, you know, oh, I didn't get on the New York Times bestsellers list or whatever. Those are people that are going to stick with it because it's just in them, it's part of them, and they can't give it up. And that's kind of how I think the cream rises to the top, is longevity being one way, and persistence. And then, of course, you know, having a real talent and not just saying, okay, you know, everybody else writing the book, I'm going to jump on this bandwagon. So I think, you know, that's what makes for longevity.
Uh-huh. Right. And, you know, even doing a New York Times bestselling list, there's even ways to get on that people are now trying to do. But, of course, it costs a lot of money to do that. We'll use Essence because that's a little smaller, the Essence best-selling book. You know, it's just basically finding a hub. And even in Atlanta where you are, Alexa, I'm sure it's easy to find a hub or a bookstore that's connected to that. If you buy so many books out of that bookstore for that month, you'll get on the list. I mean, you know, it's just, and then you can donate the books. I mean, you can buy maybe 2,000 books out of that bookstore. You get on the list, you donate the books, you're on the list, and that, a lot of people do it. They get on the New York Times bestseller list by doing it. But is that really right? Yeah,
you know,
no, maybe
but,
it
know,
isn't.
It's not even, you know, it's just the real reality of it. And I've heard exactly what you have said. I've heard that.
Right.
I've never done that. Maybe that's why, you know, I haven't been on the list. But
you're a great author anyway. So I have a couple of your books on my shelf. So
thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
But it's political. It's just like anything else. You know, this industry, just like anything, any other corporation in America, is political. And that's the bottom line as well.
Right. But, you know, I mean, it's what it is now. Technology has changed the literary game dramatically. Even with Amazon, we were talking about Amazon. You know, not only can you do books there, you can do movies there. You can publish your music there. I mean, they'll put out albums, CDs for you, and all that.
Now,
all
I
that can be marketed on there.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you can do all that stuff on there. And since you're talking about making people come to life and everything, why not have you not written a screenplay, or do you have one and haven't told anything?
You know, I'm going to be honest about this. Years ago, when that came, like the new shift, when a lot of authors were doing the screenplays and the movie scripts and all of that, I decided, you know, I'm gonna do this. You know, I can see this book or that book as a movie, you know, on the small screen or the big screen. And so I started like taking classes and everything and screenwriting, started buying all these books and everything. And you know what? I decided that I didn't like it. I just didn't like it. I like the novel. I like the whole structure of novel writing. You have to condense everything in screenwriting.
I like novel writing. Because you've got to stay within 200 pages of a screen, 120, 150 to 200 pages for a screenplay, and you can't put all the details in there because something's going to get cut out.
Exactly. And I'm really big in my books with, you know, the emotion and all of this. So I didn't really like it. But my dream is definitely still to, you know, see my books or books or whatever, you know, as on the small screen or, you know, even better on the big screen. So that's definitely still a dream. Maybe not with me writing the screenplay. But to definitely see it there at some point.
Right. Okay. What about you, Troy?
That is definitely a dream. It could happen. That's why I try to, you know, I do try to mainstream, you know, a lot of my stuff. I'm not very big on writing screenplays.
Well, you know, actually, you know, everybody, the screenplay is
for me.
Well, but you know, the thing about a screenplay, especially writing in a
screenplay.
Right, especially writing an adapted screenplay, which is one that comes from a book or something that's already out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to transpose it over versus writing one straight up because you have something to go by. But like you said, the part is you have to cut some things out.
Exactly.
You know, you have to decide what's going to be edited. And then once it gets into film, then the editor is going to come in and do some things that's going to change it and mess it up or whatever. And, you know, so those are things that you have to be willing to sacrifice when you do that. But, you know, sometimes, you know, it depends. You know, some books can be a screenplay and still have all its flavor if it's done correctly. But like you said, that's a chance you have to take. And if you sell your book to a screenwriter, then once you sell it, you have no more anything to say in it. But unless the people are saying, well, we want you to be a consultant to help us to make sure is there. But how often does it happen? As soon as your screenplay is made, it, you know, you don't get paid until it becomes, okay, we got a movie, and then they start shooting. Mm-hmm. Until they start actually shooting the movie, you don't get nothing for it until they actually do. So it's just, like you said, it's whether you want to go through that or not, it's the thing that you have to really look at.
Well, a lot of authors are successfully I mean, Zane's movie is coming out, next month on the big screen. There have been several Lifetime movies from various authors. So, I mean, I'm you know, very proud of them, and I hope I'm at some point counted in the number as well. But it is different.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it is very different, and I had the opportunity about a year ago to actually do, I forgot the term is called, I think it's called a vignette, I think is what the term is. So did actually do part of Diary of a Stalker, and it was actually performed by professional actors at the Green Room, which I think is no longer here in Atlanta, but the Green Room here in Atlanta. And so it was like a whole night. It was myself and four other authors, and we all had pieces of our various novels performed by actors, actresses on stage. And so it was quite an experience, and we had to write it, and we had to direct it, and we went to the practices with the actors. And so it was like really crazy just being, you know, wearing all those hats, director, writer, and all of that.
So let me ask you this, since you're in Atlanta, what do you think about Tyler Perry getting the studio down there, making a Black Hollywood?
Oh, I'm excited, and I'm excited to be here, you know, in his backyard. So, I think that is great. I think that, that's where he's going to be at.
Is it the whole base, or is it just part of the base?
I'm not sure, because I haven't really been following it. I heard when it was first announced, but I haven't really been following it. But I think, I really admire him because he received so many rejections, but he did not let that, get him down. He went out and did it himself, and he stayed with it, and, he went from sleeping in his car to where he is now. So I think that is a great success story that, regardless of your feelings about his movies and the whole Madea and the TV shows, because I know it seems like it's kind of split down the middle. Either you love him or you hate him. You still got
to admire he ain't the first person to put a dress on to be successful. We got to always remember that Flip Wilson was the first guy on a variety, black man on a variety show, and he had a female character as well. So, whatever. Everybody has their own feelings about Tyler Perry, this buffoonism or whatever, or not, or whatever. But anyway, like you said, he's doing it. He's going to have a Black Hollywood down there. The guy that was on, remember the black guy's name, but he had a studio up in Virginia, but you don't hear much coming out of that studio. The guy that was on, what is his name? I can't even think of his name right now. It's a husband and wife that were in movies and did sitcoms back in the day, and they have theater. I have to remember the guy's name, but I think he was on Bonnie Miller or something, the black guy that was on Bonnie Miller or whatever. Anyway, he has
theater. You really took it back. You came on Bonnie Miller.
I don't even know who that is, right?
No,
do
I know Bonnie Miller.
I went back. Well, anyway, it's the guy that, and I don't even know if it's him, but it's one of those guys from that era of time that has he has a studio. It's actually, I've seen the studio in Virginia.
Uh-huh.
It's right there in Petersburg, but I don't know what they put some movies out there, but it's not done a lot, so you don't hear much about that studio. So I guess, of course, Tyler Perry, when he does his, I'm sure he's going to have it. It's going to be the new Black Hollywood.
Since
there's a lot of black people already in Atlanta, it's going to be more, going to be flocking in, and it's just going to be what it is. So, I'm proud of him. I'm glad. I don't have nothing against him. I don't hate him. I ain't got nothing against him. I can't hate him. The guy's rich.
Rich. He's very rich.
Yeah,
rich.
So there's nothing I can do about that or say or, I may not like everything that he puts out.
His story. You have to
admire
his
zeal. I do. I admire the zeal and the drive and everything that he has. Like you said, he was homeless, and now look at him. So I have nothing against what he's doing. It's okay. But, like I said, it'd be good to see one of your books become a movie. I'm sure you can do that if you really, really, really wanted to. And that's probably why it's going to be, because you're not trying to do it. That's probably why it's going to happen.
Well, I'm not really out there hustling the way I did back in the day with, first coming out as a self-published author. I'm not really out there like that, because I really believe it's more about contacts and relationships. Because I've heard stories where you give a book to somebody at the airport, not knowing that this person knows this person hands the book to this person, before you know it, you got a call, and almost like, 6 degrees of separation. So I think it's really a lot of times who you kind of know.
Well, you're down there now, so it'll probably happen. Like I said, you're in the right place, so.
Well,
I
hope so. I claim
there.
It. Thank you. I claim it.
Yeah. It can happen. And I can see it. Just don't forget who I am when you get really big, because you're big now, but you're going to be real big. And I appreciate you, because there's a lot of mainstream authors that I know. I know a lot of them. And then there's some that probably wouldn't do a Word Sexy Radio interview. And then there's some that, because they think they're too big for it, or because they're mainstream. or whatever. But you've always been a loyal, humble person, a real person. And there's others that has been on here as well that's come on and done, you know, some things. But you got some that you can't give them unless you got to give them some big money. They ain't going to come on the show.
See, that is so,
this ain't big
that,
enough.
I mean,
and you got to give them questions. And,
yeah, that,
you know,
is
I don't never give
I
out
mean,
questions.
I just like to, I can just get on. I mean, I did ask you, you know, okay, what are we going to talk about? But, you know, I can really, as long as I'm talking about books and writing and anything about the industry, I can just kind of go with the flow because I just love talking about that. And so if I get with like-minded people who also have that same passion, you know, I don't have to know exactly what you're going to ask me as long as it's nothing like totally, totally crazy. But,
Right. Well, sometimes we do talk about other issues like relationships and stuff like that, but tonight wasn't that night. And I'm glad that you two are here because both of y'all are both sides of the spectrum, and you write the same. I didn't know when I put you guys on tonight that you both were kind of writing the same type of genre of things, and where on one side was mainstream and the other wasn't. That it just worked out perfectly. So, you know, I'm just glad that we were able to do that and that you were able to take the time out to come on the show and you know, talk with old Red Snapper, you know. but like I said, I'm very nice tonight. Not that I'm not nice. I don't want you to get the wrong idea, Troy. I'm nice, but a lot of times I do a lot of cussing. I'm usually cussing and all kinds of stuff. But I'm being very nice tonight.
I listened to some of the replays. I knew
what
to expect.
Oh, so you know how raw I can be.
I'm gonna have to go back and listen to some of the replays then, because I've never heard that side. Even when we co-host together, you were like, "This is
nice." I always try to let you talk. I mean, yeah, when you was on the show with me, when you co-host for a little while, you know, I try not to be that person, that negative, or not gonna say negative, but that cusser. I wasn't doing that because I was all into your sweet voice and you know, and all of that. So you know, it was just that, but. I do get raw. We do get raw. Like, last week's show was really raunchy.
It was really raunchy.
The women that was on the show last week, they brought it that way, and I just kind of went with it. They were talking about sucking this and doing that, and so that was definitely not the night for you to be on the show. But anyway.
I was quiet as a little mouse.
Yeah. Well, at least you wouldn't have hung up. I thank you for that. But anyway, they were going off, and then it got into the second hour got really into a serious side of things. So first hour, they wanted to get it out, I guess, and once they got it out, they were fine. But they were erotic fiction authors, so you know they're going to talk erotica soon. But
really, does one equate the other? I mean,
not
I
really.
No, I
but
write,
they
some
just,
of my books are classified as erotica. But
and they are, and
are.
I understand you don't just get into it because you're a lady. And not saying they weren't ladies, but I'm just saying they just felt like they wanted to talk about sucking somebody off or whatever, and I just let them do it.
Okay.
I let them do it, you know. And how much would it cost you? And they were talking about prostitution should be legal because you should be able to charge this amount and what you should do and how much their stuff's worth. They actually went into it. I think my pussy is worth this much, and I think mine is all. I'm like, damn.
Oh,
so I said
no.
Back. I know. So go back and listen to that show. That was last week, the day after my birthday, actually. It was September 2nd. It was my birthday was Labor Day, so they were on, and they gave me a thrill. Anyway.
I listened to that one. I was like, well, let's see. Let's try
it. Do I want to be on this show? I mean,
I knew it said Word Sexy Radio. I read all the descriptions, and I was like, I might not be ready.
The show has ran for 5 years. We actually took 8 months off, and we came back about 4 months ago. And it's you know, people I thought were tired of me after 5 years, but they were like, we need you back. You're the pioneer that started it off to be able to talk. Because I don't put questions out for a reason. I want you to come out with your own thoughts and not having thought about it and be able to say what you feel about that and your passion there, what you feel about what it is, that, whatever the question is. That's
right.
The reason why I don't do that. Because a lot of people give you questions, pre-done questions, and they stick to that script.
I've had it both ways, and, you know, it doesn't matter. I kind of like to know what you're going to talk about, but it doesn't have to be, you know, okay, I'm going to ask this question, so...
Yeah, well, you was asking them questions today. I was like, man, she's trying to slam me. What's she trying to do here? I mean, she's been on here before. She know I don't throw out questions. But anyway, she's like, I haven't done Word Sexy in a while. Blog talking a while, so I'm just like, what are we doing? I said, well, you can come up with a subject. So did you?
No, I decided to just kind of go slow, you know.
Yeah, okay. So that's fine. That's fine. And that's good. I think we're having a great conversation because a lot of people that's listening, they do, they're authors that want to, people that want to be authors and maybe want to write and want to know what they can do to get started and stuff like that. But so since you don't have anything out yet right now, have you still been doing any book signings? Both of you, we'll start with you, Electa. Have you been doing any book signings or anything?
Basically what I have been doing is, I have two events that are coming up. One is October 17th and 18th. I'm going to be one of the featured authors at the Black Authors and Readers Rock Weekend. This is in Bowie, Maryland, and it's by the sponsor is Sharon Lucas. So I'm going to be there, and it's going to be Kimberly Lawson Roby, and I don't know all the featured authors, but I know she's going to be one of the speakers. So it's going to be all of us there, so that should be fun. And then November 7th, I'm actually going to be out in Dallas, Texas, where I'm going to be meeting for the entire weekend with Divas Read 2 Book Club, and this is by Lolita Allen. She's the president of that club. And so they had read my book, the one that came out last year, When Baldwin Loved Brendan, and they really liked it, and they had it as their 2013 book of the year for their club. And so they have this event every year around the holidays, and they always fly an author out to kind of spend the whole weekend with them and do various things. So that's going to be a lot of fun as well. So those are the two things that are on my plate that's coming up shortly.
Okay, well, that's good. And what you got going on, Troy? I'm sure you're getting out there deep because you said you can wear all these hats. I'm sure you have that. Now, do you have authors under you as well? Now, answer the first question, and then after that, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to throw another one in there.
No, that's fine. I can handle multiple questions. I am a multitasker always.
You have to be if you're a publisher. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, man. I'm not the publisher. I actually work for a publisher, but I support my publishing team. So I do a lot for them. I also edit. So, I do a couple of different things. So I'm not only writing, but I'm editing other people's stuff. I try not to edit my own stuff.
Let's talk about that. Editing other people's work.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's when you get to see all the stuff. It'll be like, I try to a spoonful of sugar. That's all I'm gonna say.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. We'll leave it at that. Because you know that's a whole different. That's a whole different word. Sexy show. That's definitely
a whole different
segment. Subject,
but
right.
It keeps me busy. I don't have books in print as of yet. Just starting out, trying to get my name out there. So everything really is in ebook form at this point. We are 3 episodes into my series. And they have been going well. The response has been great. I have a fan base. I don't have a big head, or I'm not cocky about it. I'm always trying to, please my readers, especially the loyal ones. And once I get to the end of this series, then we're going to put it in print. And then at that point, then I'll try and, start doing some book signings and different things. But basically,
so you said King Publishing, right?
Mm-hmm. King Publishing Group.
Okay.
It's with Tremaine Johnson, and he does some urban fiction. He's had some very successful, books. I know one of my favorites of his is called My America, and it just really talks about, the struggle of the black man in America. It's really good. It's not that typical urban type of deal. And so I've been very fortunate enough to be connected with, some really good people. Just like Electa said, it's not always about what you know, but it's about who you know and who you're connected with. So I try and, just make really good connections. And that's really what since I've been out, is just making good connections.
That's good. So you're not dealing with some people that's writing 5 whores to death or... Five Horse Saga, or How Many Bitches Can Fuck, or something like that.
God.
Or I mean, there are books. You think I'm playing? There's books out there with these titles. There's books out there that have titles like that. I mean, serious. You think I'm playing?
A more respectable group.
But you did
I'm
those
serious.
Being called bitches and different things like that's one of the words you will you know, they rarely ever see me use or say, you know, as bitch, because really, I just think it's unnecessary. I was always taught, you know, people who use a lot of profanity and vulgarity just don't have the, you know, the capacity to use real words.
Don't
get me wrong, because when I get mad, it just flies. It gets real loose, you know. It just boom. But
vocabulary is she just dogged me right here on Word Sexy Radio.
Sorry,
my vocabulary is better than that. Trust me, my vocabulary is very longer than me cussing. I just, you know,
I'm being very respectful because Alexa is on the phone and I'm trying to be nice.
I'm thinking, though, that sometimes these titles, they have to be just for just kind of like that shock value or just kind of being real sensational, that aspect to make someone stop, you know, if you're in a bookstore or wherever, you know, online or wherever, and you see this book and you see this title, I'm assuming it's in it for the shock value. Because
it's there to get the readers to pick it up, basically. I've talked to a few people and, you know, found some things out, and it's basically just there to pull in a certain, you know, group of readers.
Yeah.
And that's those people that like Ratchet TV and that, you know.
Yeah. And I believe that.
And I don't knock it. It's just not my thing.
Yeah, it's just
and I'm not knocking it. I'm just making fun of it. That's what I'm doing. I'm making fun of it. It doesn't mean that I think it's negative.
It is pulling in a certain group of readers, though. I mean, personally, if I, you know, and I'm not judging anyone either, but me personally, if I was in a bookstore or online, I wouldn't be interested. The title would be a turnoff to me just by itself, just the title. But I think there definitely is a group of people, you know, that would be like, oh, let me take another look. Oh, what is this about? And it would want to go deeper to find out exactly what the book is about. But personally, I think that if it's good writing, it's a good story, it's a good book, you could have, you know, whatever title. You know, you don't have to have that type of title. People will hear about it, they'll pick it up, and they'll read it. And you don't have to have those type of shock value type titles.
Right, because, you know, there's a whole series. I think Joy King was the author, and I'm not dogging her. I'm just saying she started the bitch series, and then
and
now everybody is just trying to take it to another level because they're trying to get out there. So
yeah, and she was very successful because in fact Joy and I, she was one an anthology I did back in the day. We did it with HarperCollins, and it was four of us, and she was one of the female authors that was part of this anthology. So I got to know her back then, and she was very, very, very popular, and especially that particular series.
Right. Yeah, I haven't seen much out from her lately, but yeah, she's definitely, I mean, very attractive woman, has her own self on her covers, you know, just a whole bunch of different stuff. So, you know, it just depends, you know, I mean, what you want to read, you know.
and it's
out there.
True.
Everything
it's,
you want is out there. You know,
yeah.
You have
whatever
to sometimes reach people at the level that they're at. You understand
you go.
What
I was
saying?
Just getting
like,
ready
everybody
to say that.
Is not at the level of a Beowulf. Like, you know, I have my 17-year-old son come home and tell me, "Hey, Mom, we're reading Beowulf." And
oh, my God, I remember
that.
The
teacher was upset with me. Yeah, the teacher was upset with him because he chose not to read it for a third time. And she was like, "Are you kidding me? You've read it twice already?" She was like, "Yeah, Beowulf. It's one of my mom's favorites." So we watched, you know, we read it. We watched, you know, different versions of the movie. He knows it very well. So, you know, everybody
and evidently enjoys it. So that's a good thing.
Because like I said,
man.
Yeah, and like I said, some of the titles that are out there, and you know, every thug needs a down ass bitch, you know, stuff like that. I guess, like you said, it depends on your kind of reading.
Bad
news bitches. Moreover, everything, move over, you know, street love, when a rich thug wants you, you know, red bottom bitches.
You're going to get some hate mail after this show.
I get it all the time anyway because I talk shit anyway. I didn't dog Tyler Perry tonight, so I'm, you know, we could backstabbing bitches, you know, betrayal, love, and lies. You know, it just,
and here
it's
I am being real simple in today's world and just saying, wife pills can only write from the perspective that I know.
Sideline hoe. They got a book called Sideline Hoe out there, yeah.
Well, I've never been one of those. I can't speak to that. I can only speak to what I know, and that's, you know, what I try to do, and that's what wife tells basically is. It's just, it's what I know. It's the area and the realm that I'm comfortable in, and like you, I think you said earlier, I had somebody literally tell me, what is a white woman doing writing in an urban fiction genre? And I was like, well, excuse me, but the last time I looked in the mirror, I was pretty chocolate. No one thought my, you know, they think my writing is not, I guess, urban enough. It's just not.
Because you're not talking, you're not using your bonics. You're not using your bonics or you're not using street lingo, maybe. I don't know what you're doing because I haven't read any of your books. I'm going to, though. But the thing is I guess if you're writing a certain way, I guess they think they can tell if you've been there or something like. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier in the show. Being able to write in such a manner, whether you've never experienced it or not, but to make the person that's reading think that you have. That's author.
Exactly.
That's an author. That's what I call an author. If you can make me feel like you're doing something and you've written it, and I'm like, well, damn. This, you know, and make me think that you actually experienced it, then I would, that'd be, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And being able to cross genres. I mean, if you can write, you can write. It shouldn't matter what genre it's in. You should be able to cross, you know, cross genres and be able to write in any form.
It's called being able to adaptation. It's one of those things that, you know, evolution has taught us that we need to learn how to do, and that's be able to adapt. And once you learn that in your everyday life, you can apply that in your writing, you know, and really every walk of life. So I have been fortunate enough to, you know, come from a place where I've learned, you know, I had no choice. I had to learn real quick how to adapt. I can be that, I can be that correct, speaking correct grammar and go straight to the ebonics. It just depends on which situation I'm in and what I need to do. I can do it. It's not a problem. I've learned how to, you know, adapt. So when people tell me, hey, your writing's not urban enough, it's like, okay, well, let me, you know, hip you to this and just show you what I can do because you seem to doubt my skill. Because
My thing is, I'm not dogging it. I'm going to say this one more time, people, so if you want to write hate mail, it's fine. I'm not dogging a genre. I'm just saying, as black people, do we always have to present ourselves in that way? Why can't we present ourselves in all kind of ways and not just be just, when they see a book, they automatically know it's a black book or I think it's for black people because of what's on it. Cover and you know, all those things, that's what I'm saying. That's all I'm talking about.
Well, to me, it's going to be really interesting.
Let's have some diversity in our ourselves. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Now, I was just going to say it's going to be really interesting in the future just to see how this whole renaissance or whatever you want to call it will go down in, like, the history books, you know, like the urban, the Harlem Renaissance or whatever. I just really – it's going to be really – well, I guess we won't be around, but it's going to be really interesting to, you know, to see how it's going to be portrayed, you know, just
where
like
how –
Where
are you going? You're going to be around. Where are you going?
I mean, years from now, when like you read about when you were in school, you read about the Harlem Renaissance or whatever.
Right.
So I'm saying it's going to be interesting years from now. I mean, I don't know how many years from now, but to just have that story told about this era where all these books came out by all these African American writers and how that's going to be presented, much like how will President Obama be treated in the history books. So I just think that's kind of interesting.
And it is going to be interesting. And another thing is you know, they probably think it's a fad, just like they thought hip hop was. You know, they thought that was just a fad that was going to go away eventually, like disco or whatever, and it's still here. And they're like, dang, now they're doing it so much. I mean, every commercial you see on TV now, it's got some old song or something, African-American song or hip-hop or something. It's just like, Have they changed the demographic to focus on us, or they just want that now? They're able to be able to say that that's what they've been listening to all along. So
no, it's a changing of the demographic to reach those dollars, because
yeah.
I come from a bit of a corporate, you know, sales type of background. And when you realize you have a group of people who will buy your product just to have, you know, to look good, you're going to cater to that. It's sad. And as to what Alexa was saying, it would be interesting to see how this is played out over the, you know, course of history, how it's reflected upon. Yeah, you know,
right.
I was fortunate enough to, like I said, be raised by grandparents and, you know, have five generations, you know, of women living in our family and talk with my, you know, great-grandmother for, you know, years until I became an adult and had children of my own. You know, she was born in 1902. When you are fortunate to have something like that in your daily life and not every now and again, you have a different perspective.
Yeah,
and as a 38-year-old woman, I grieve. There are days that I just sit and it grieves me, things that I
hear.
Yeah. You know, because I sit and my grandma and my granddaddy and my great-grandma, the things they went through was for this? Really? Are you kidding me? Is this what we're doing? You know?
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I would like to know what my frat brother would be thinking right now, Martin Luther King Jr., if he was around looking at all this. He'd be 83 now if he was still alive. I wonder what he would say about all of this. Did I do all this for this? Or what, you know, I mean.
For this, to give you the opportunity to turn it into this.
Or even others, you know, others who fought to get us where we are now. Thurgood Marshall and a few others, you know, I mean.
It's bad. It really is a bad situation.
Yeah, it's just, you know, yeah. And even to have a president that is in office and still prejudice is still there. And he's the commander-in-chief, the commander of the free world, and he's still getting stuff happening. This man, since he's been in office. They tried to impeach him. They tried to sue him. They tried to.
It's almost like it got worse when he got in office. I mean, it was just more. I mean, that may just be my perception, but it seems like got, you know, more just really in your face type racism when he did become president.
Because it was dormant. It wasn't dormant. It was just hidden. It was hidden in other ways for so long.
It's more in your face.
It's never left. Right.
Yeah,
it's never left. It was just hidden. In such a manner, but when he was running, you could see all these people that really didn't like it, with the "don't tread on me" signs and all this stuff, you know, walking around with all that. A lot of people didn't even know what that meant, but that was just the Tea Party and all these people running around using that, like trinity, like they said, "don't tread on me" and trinity. We're trying to get away from that, and you know, when he was running, and it's been there, and like I said, those people have been in office, and the most important election to us that we have failed to realize what I hate. Is the fact that, yeah, we wanted to get him in office, but after that, people sat down. The most important election should have been the Congress, because when you put the right Congress in to support him, people sat down and didn't go vote. They felt like, well, we got a black president now.
Mm-hmm.
But the most important was keeping them, like now that's coming up now. If we vote in November for some of these people that's in there now to get rid of him, he can have a better chance to finish his term out. Why not having so much opposition? But a lot of people didn't realize that. They went and let these people get back in office and let some that weren't there get in, and it just made it worse for him.
Yeah, he has definitely had a – I don't know how they do it. I mean, just – I don't know how they do it. That's all I can say, because just so much hatred and racism has been shown to them. I mean, the entire family. You know, they talk about even the first lady, the children. I mean, even the kids are, you know, off limits.
Right. They might. I guess they're going to burn all of the furniture and stuff when he gets out of office.
Oh, don't say that. Don't say that.
You know, burn everything. Well, they won't show it, but they'll probably get rid of all the stuff. Get all this nigger stuff out of here. You know,
oh, my God.
Get all the smell out.
You're
you know what I mean?
So
let's fumigate the place.
You're
going to
get
so much. You know why I'm saying that? I'm sure if somebody white comes in after him, I'm sure it's going to be white. And if it's not Hillary, they're going to be fumigating and doing all that. Even for her, she might still do it. But still, the thing is I'm just being real. I'm being honest.
And it doesn't matter if it's the same party or not. It's going to be the same
thing. It doesn't. Thing. They're going to do it.
Even if
they're
it's
gonna
a Democrat
it.
That replaces him in office, they're going to feel the same. Oh, no, get this out of here.
Well, right. You know, see, I always have to play
the first
double
lady.
Advocate. They can't come in and decorate how they want to decorate. So maybe they'll come in and they'll move stuff, but they're just decorating in their own taste and style.
Well, I didn't go sleep in this room because he was in that room. I ain't going in there.
Stop.
Yeah,
I gotta get these
mattresses
off.
Got him. Oh, my God.
But, you know, they have to provide, some of that stuff they have to provide themselves, like all the food they pay for and all that. But some things they do get to move in that's their personal stuff. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, I don't put it past them because of what we've seen and how they've treated this guy since he's been in office, how gray he's gotten in the last 6 years.
Well, we knew
that. I mean,
we already had predicted that. I mean, every president.
Yeah, they all get real gray because
of
all the pressure. But he's really – and me, he's only 30 days older than me. So I'm like, look, dude, I mean, I know they dogging you. They're putting you through a whole bunch of stuff. You know, it's – I don't know. It's just crazy. But I don't know who's going to replace him. I don't know who's going to be the next person. But if Hillary runs, she might have a chance. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's my
prediction.
Yeah, yeah.
She's going to be the first female president.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and be able to make history being the first, be the president, and then a first man.
She's going to be the first man. All right.
The first man.
That
not the first lady, but the first man.
Well, remember, Bill was also supposedly the first black president, remember?
Oh, yeah, he was.
The honorary first black president.
Exactly. Yep. Yep, exactly. Because I remember Primary Colors. Did you ever see that movie?
Yes, I did.
You know that was supposed to be him. You know that was supposed to be the Clintons. That movie was based on them when he was running for governor. And how they were supposed to be black. The rumor of him having a black woman pregnant with a child that's supposed to be hidden and all this. You know, all this stuff. That was supposed to be, it was a primary written, if you've never seen the Primary Colors, it was basically about the Clinton administration when he was running for governor of Arkansas. So, a little trivia history.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So, Mr. History Buff, we learned something about you.
Have a degree in history, though. I mean, for those who don't know, even though they always hear me cussing, I do have a couple of bachelor's degrees and a master's degree, so I'm not just a cusser. I mean, I do.
You're not just a
cusser. I do have some education.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
But just because you have education on me, you can't say shit or damn. Or whatever, you know, every
you
now and then.
Again, I say to you, I use it. I just don't use it all the time.
You don't want to do it because of Alexa, I know. I know.
Oh, wait
because,
a minute.
Because of Alexa,
what
right?
do you mean because of me?
Because we're letting you have that.
I have said those words many, many times.
I'm sure, but I haven't heard you say them.
You have earned a certain level of respect in the literary world, especially where I'm concerned. I hope
oh,
that
me too.
I mean,
and
I
want to stay friends
I,
with you, Alexa. I want to lose your friendship because that damn red snapper, all he does is cuss. And she'll be cussing while she's talking
look,
about
I,
me.
Look,
you
I'm
know.
Not even saying. I'm like, he was just cursing. Not even just cussing.
Right.
But I want you to be who you are. I want to be who I am. And that's the thing about me. You know, I don't follow any cliques. I don't follow any groups. I'm just me. You know, I'm just doing my thing and do yours.
Right. Well, you know, that's good that you're that way, but there are some, and I mean, not just mainstream authors, but there are some that are not mainstream that feel like their nose is up in the air, that they feel like they got a couple of books out, that they're this, and you got to treat them a certain way. So, and it's crazy, you know, because sometimes you go to some of these book conventions, and if you're not a mainstream author, sometimes they'll put you in the back room somewhere, or it just depends. But then you got some that might be getting a little break, and then they feel like, oh, I'm with them now. I'm part of that elite now, and they get the big head. So,
And
that's in any genre,
and
you know, music.
No, I'm saying wow because I can co-sign. I can co-sign on that. I've been out there for a while now, and so I've seen a lot. And you're exactly right. You're exactly right. But with me, you know, I'm going to always, regardless of what happens, you know, I'm going to always stay true to myself. I know what I'm in this for, and that, you know, that's what I go by. That's what I live by. It's what I'm in this whole industry for. And it's not to follow. It's not to kiss anybody's butt. It's not to, you know, I'm humble. I'm humble because the readers like my books, and they're buying my books, and they're spreading the word, and I have a growing great fan base. You know, I'm humble and think that's a great reward by itself. I don't have to get a big head, you know. You know, of course, I would love to go and, you know, be like, you know, I mean, I do the featured author things, but, you know, like a New York Times best-selling featured author or whatever. And I would love to get to that level, and hopefully, you know, I claim it that one day I will be there, but I'll still be the same old, you know. I'll still be the same, so.
Right. Yeah. Well, I know one person I can really say that doesn't really act like that to me, and I know he's another one of my frat brothers. That's Eric Jerome Dickey.
Yes, yes.
Now, I've
yes.
been around Eric two times, and Eric is a normal guy. I mean, especially when he comes around the frat, he's just a guy. Okay, he's been on New York Times bestseller several times
yes,
and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, but he doesn't act like, well, I'm a New York Times bestselling author, so you can't talk to me. You know, he don't do that. You know, I can talk to him. I can call him right now, and he'll talk to me because, you know, we frat and everything, but he'll talk to me like we brothers. You know, I mean, that's what it is.
And I've always seen him treat other people the same way.
Yeah, I've seen him treat other people like that. He never acts like he's better. He might say, hey man, where can I go get some barbecue? And I say, okay, let's go. I'll take you down here. And we just walk and go get some barbecue, and you're with the New York Times bestseller author, and you're walking down the street.
Exactly.
You think that way, but he doesn't. You know, it's just he's just what he is, you know. But you got some. They might get on the New York Times bestseller list, or may not never get on it. I'm such and such, and I am, you know, you can't treat me that way. And I know a couple. I ain't going to say no names.
Are you going to throw any names out there for
no,
that?
I was. I'm not. I ain't going to throw nobody's name out, Pink. I mean, you know, and, but anyway, you know Pink, Arthur Pink, right? Have you ever heard of her?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I'll just
leave it at that. Anyway, we'll just leave it at that.
Okay. Oh.
No. You know Pink. You know her, right?
I do. Definitely.
Is she a good friend of yours? I'm sorry. Don't let me talk about your friend.
Let me just ask. No, we'll talk offline.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably better.
In Atlanta?
Yeah. She was on the show a couple of times, and she actually got mad at me and said I was unprofessional because she had gotten what's that author, the raunchy author that's got blonde hair? What's her name? I can't even think of her name right now. She was on the show. Her name begins with an M, if I can think of it.
I'm not throwing any names out.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think of it.
I'm not going to say a word.
I'm not saying anything.
I'm going to stay over here.
What is her name?
I'm not going to say one thing.
Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah. I think I
Okay, anyway, she was on the show, and she was talking to Nasty because that's what she does. And she got mad because she felt like I was making a show about me, and I wasn't. I was only going with the flow of the way the interview was going and how Mary, it was, what's her name, Mary, well, what's her name, Mary something, Honeybee. You know what I'm talking about, right?
I know the author, yes.
Yeah, okay, we'll just leave it at that. Anyway, she was on the show, and she was having fun, but Pink got upset, Marissa got upset and thought I was unprofessional and didn't want to talk to me anymore, so I'm just being honest. That's what happened.
Okay.
So,
but yeah, I definitely know they are both here in Atlanta. They're both here in Atlanta, and in fact, at one point, I was part of the Georgia Peach Authors, and this was pretty much Marissa's brainchild, so to speak. So there's a group of us, all different genres, you know, pretty much touring and promoting locally in the Atlanta area.
Right. And this is nothing negative, so if anybody want to go back and tell her, go ahead. But the thing is I'm talking to the audience, not you guys. But I'm not saying anything negative. I'm just giving an example of some authors that think that way.
Well, yeah, and I think that's everywhere. I mean, anytime, you know, anywhere in the entertainment industry, and this is the entertainment industry, you know, they're always going to be those different levels. But I'm just saying for me, you know, regardless of what happens, what's yet to come, I'm always going to be true to myself. I'm always going to be humble. And that's that's just me. And I think that pretty much the saying is true that regardless of what level you're at, you're still acting out who you really are. And
right.
I think that's a true statement.
Well, I know a couple of authors that I really like as well that are cool. They always seem to be okay when I see them and talk to them. They treat me well.
That's what I'm saying. That's who they are. Regardless, you're acting out who you are. And if you get, you know, the fame and the money or whatever, that was already in you. That's how you're acting because that's who you are. And so that's what
right.
I'm saying. That
I like the real you.
Yeah, exactly.
It highlights the real you. And
yeah, and you ain't got to spend all this time trying to be something else. When you're you, you're you. You don't have to worry about trying to be something.
And you know what? I think that comes across as genuine to most readers. I think most readers can pick that up to kind of feel that.
They can.
So,
trust me, they can.
Yeah.
Because when people were here and that person was here, one of them, I ain't going to say which one, they felt that, and they were like, "Well, I was buying her book. I don't know if I want to buy something from her anymore because she was acting funny to the people. And these are your people that's putting money in your pocket,
right?
You know,
exactly.
You know, I just don't understand that. But I know, like Rashonda Tate Billingsley, she's great, great person.
Oh yeah, yeah, she really is.
Victoria, Christopher Murray, that's always with her. Great person. Love them both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some authors, like I said, that are cool. And these are guys that hang with Eric. They're all those that are around that circle with him are pretty cool people. And then you got some that are just assholes. I'm just going to say it like that. But they were assholes before they came into the industry.
You're going to get so much email. Oh, tune into that show he was talking about. You're going to get so much email.
Yeah, well, whatever. Fuck it. Now you're making the words come out now. Well, I'm just going to say fuck it. But it's okay. You know, I've been hated before. Everybody doesn't like me, so it's not a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
But if you're going to get in this game, you got to understand those that are listening that are interested and want to write. If you're going to come into the literary game, literary world, you know, you got to be true to yourself like the women are saying tonight. You definitely got to be who you are. And don't forget who you are once you get a little fame under you. You know, get a couple of books out there and they start doing well. Don't get so caught up in that you lose your craft, because a lot of people are hungry when they first start out. They might put out a great product, just like in the music industry. Then once they get a couple of good songs out, you can tell in their work that they're losing it because they feel like, oh, I've arrived now, so I'm putting out some garbage now, or they pull back a little bit. Don't do that. Continue to do like you can. It's like the book that everybody talks about that Sister Soulja wrote, the greatest story, what is it called?
The coldest winter.
Yeah, the coldest winter ever. Everybody loves that book. And then there's a couple others she wrote that wasn't that good, but they're good. But I don't know if it's because she got famous or whatever, but, you know, just sometimes you put that great novel out, and then, you know, I'm just saying that just when you come out, be true to yourself and write your books for your fans, and you know, the fans can have an input to a certain point, but just also remember you're the one that's writing this. You know, give them a chance to bring your flavor to, because they came to you because they like the way you write. So don't just do everything they tell you. Next thing you know, they're writing the book for you. You don't want them to do that. You want to write and stay true to yourself. Like she keeps, Lexa's been saying the whole night, be true to yourself. You know, listen to your fans, but be true to yourself and continue to stay where you are, where they're liking you. Now, you know, don't go left field and just go stupid. But Walter Mosley is one person that I look at that has been out and has so many things out there. He's done almost everything that you can think of. So, you know, and he's not losing his fan base. He's got to be able to.
Yeah, right. And I think there are some authors that are like, they just really have, I mean, Zane, I mean, just a great following that no matter what you write, no matter what you do, you're going to have, like, these devoted, totally loyal fans that are following you. And so there are some, you know, I think that's even, like, a step even higher, you know, when you get to that level where you can put out anything and they're automatically going to buy your books, you know, just because it's you.
Right.
You know, but
I think I would prefer
to get there than to even, I think I would love that as opposed to the New York Times bestsellers list, because that's
right,
a true following.
She can have somebody else writing it. She has lots of people writing under her brand. And because it says Zane presents, people buy the book.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it might be garbage, but, you know, they'll buy it because it's got Zane presents on it.
Exactly. And that's a whole different level.
Mm-hmm. And that's the level people should hope to attain to, to really have your name, you know, be so synonymous with your craft and your product that no matter what,
for
they're going to
Yeah, because basically you've gone. Of course,
like
you're getting paid.
About tissue, if you need to blow your nose, what do you say you need to get?
A Kleenex. Yeah. And that's,
Kleenex
and that's where
a
she's
brand.
At now.
It's not
yeah.
product. It's a brand.
Yeah.
You know, you want something to drink. Oh, let me go get a Coke.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Especially if you're in Atlanta. Don't say Pepsi.
And you're right. Kleenex is not. Kleenex. You're right. Kleenex is not the product. It's the brand. But they call it a Kleenex because that's what it's known. That's what they think, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Pampers. My baby needs some Pampers. No, they don't. They need some Huggies or some Loves. They need diapers. But no, you call them
right.
Pampers.
Well, when I was growing up, we didn't have that stuff when I was a baby.
Yeah,
I'm talking about age like a book. Like I said, when I was a baby.
That you had to wash out and ring and, yeah.
Yeah, when I was a baby, yeah, you had white diapers. That was
the soft diapers that
you were walking around with cloth
now. I was what?
You had the little cloth diapers?
That's what I wore. I was born in 1961, okay? I grew up in the 60s and 70s. So
come on.
We didn't have all that.
Way old.
Exactly. Even though you know better than to, you know, like ask, you know, what is your
You're talking like you're way old. You're still a young man. 61 is
I am. I am a young man, but you know, I'm just glad of the era that I was brought up in. I mean, I'm sure everybody feels that way about their era that they came up in. But I relate to what you were saying when you were talking about having your grandmother and all that around you because you have an old soul because of it. And I grew up in that era where, you know, I mean, and that's not a negative. That's a good thing because you have some values that a lot of people are not going to get because they didn't have that type of generation around, if that makes sense.
Exactly.
I grew up with that, having – those people around, my parents were still alive today, they'd be in their 80s. But, you know, it's just, you know, a lot of people just don't know because they're having kids their kids having kids, and there's just so many things that they're missing. And we don't have, you know, we got all our men are either in jail or something is going on, they're not around. There's a whole bunch of reasons why things are the way they are, and people just don't get it. So, you know, I'm glad that I grew up in the 60s where people, if I got in trouble at school, my teacher whooped me, and then they told my mother, and I got whooped by my mother, or if I was outside and the neighbor saw me, they whooped me, and then the neighbor tell my parents, and then I got whooped. I mean, I grew up in the area where...
That's kind of like almost unbelievable when you think about it, because I cannot even believe that. I mean, think about now, and think about back then, where you could actually be paddled by your principal or a teacher in school. That's almost unbelievable. Like, I wish someone would, you know, paddle my child. But that was the thing, that you could go to the principal's office and get a paddling, or your teacher could paddle you or whatever. So it's almost like unbelievable now that was going on.
Yep, it was.
I got
When the street lights came on, you was in the house. Or going at your house. If you weren't inside, you was at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we used to tell where everybody was at, you know, you didn't have to, you know, you didn't have the internet or nothing, so you just looked to see where all the bicycles were. All the bikes out in front of Joey's house. That's where everybody was at. You know what I'm saying? So that's a different era of time, different things. But now we have all this technology and everything, and it's good to a point.
It's made a lot of people writers, and you know, made a lot of people authors, publish work.
Right,
so,
a lot of people
good
probably thought
everything.
They never would have been an author. Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got people doing music and stuff that they didn't think they was going to do because of technology. So that's what we have now.
Technology has opened the door. I think I, at a time like this, I've been very fortunate to be at that in-between stage, you know, born in a time where I'm in between. I can appreciate all the, you know, the good things like the street lights. You better be home before these street lights come on and, you know, getting paddled by the principal because I got a few of those in my, you know, days if I had a smart mouth. But, you know, but then also having access to the technology. So, you know, if the two are merged properly, then it works very well.
Yeah. Because I'll tell you right now, even looking at the football players now, and I know that none of y'all probably really get into football. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But
you're crossing the line.
Well, you know, a lot of women back then, a lot of women didn't get into football, but now they're in it. They talk it better than some men. But the thing I was going to say was, looking at these players with all this hair hanging out of the, under the helmets, my father would have went crazy if he saw that. If he was allowed to see that, he'd have went crazy, because back then we just didn't wear hair like that. He probably would have been like, "What the hell is going on with this?" You know, it just wasn't something.
Well,
you know, it was
you
clean cut, clean shaven.
Some of it is, like with the more Samoan and Polynesian players, that's a cultural thing for them.
Right.
You don't expect them to cut their hair because that's a part of their culture. So,
and
you know.
Back then, we didn't have that many people that was playing, but they did. If they did, their hair was cut. Yeah.
Right. So a lot of things is, being clean cut and, you know, fresh cut and stuff, some things do take more of a cultural shift, you know, because I am, you know, have an island heritage, you know. Dreadlocks is very much a part of that, you know, Rastafarianism and, you know, different things. It's a part of the culture. The way people are taking it now, it's a fashion trend.
Right.
But, you know, and instead of doing the research and actually knowing what things are and why it was that and why people wore their hair that way and why, you know, they just take it, it looks good, so let's do this because that's a trend, because, you know, my favorite, you know, rapper or singer or so-and-so has it. And it has just become perverted. A lot of things,
right,
you know, in today's society, you know, the root meaning behind it and the reasoning has become perverted. And
right.
So you really do have to try and mesh the old and the new together and make it cohesive and let them blend together. And I think that until we learn how to, you know, really do that, we're going to always have these different struggles and issues and stuff that we deal with.
I wish they would do that with the names, go back to having names that mean something, because these people are naming these kids, they name them all kinds of shit. And they don't know what it means. It could be a demon's name or something. They name these kids. They don't know. They are just making up stuff. It could be some demon, or it could be anything. They just, you know, it sounds good, girl. Well, at least they get away from all these car names or liquor, Alizé and Lexus and all these different names. Of, you know, they naming themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I know a set of kids, the girl is goddess, and the son's name is the god, and that is what it is, D-A-G-O-D, the god. I was like, really? Is that what we're naming our children these days?
But, you know, the problem
is
you got these celebrities naming their kids all these names, like Blue Ivy and all this mess. Is that really the kid's name, or is that just a name that they use for the street out for publicity?
But that's the thing. That's the key. They are celebrities with millions of dollars, and their kids
don't
have to buy
no
for a job with that name,
right,
you know?
Right.
So that's the difference.
I was taught to give my children names that read right on paper, I don't think my grandma was being funny, but the day I gave birth to all three of my children, she said, now, before you go with his name, you better make sure it sounds right on paper. He said, so when somebody look at it, it's not, you know, something so obscure that it just causes a problem. So I was like, okay. And that's what I did.
Yep.
I gave my children good, wholesome names.
I'm not saying you got to name them Susan or Jane or nothing like that, but I mean, something that if they do have to get a job or they do have to be presented some kind of way, that they don't have to feel automatically they're going to put their resume to the side because they see Shaniqua or something, you know.
Yeah,
they
think, I think
attitude.
That's the
Shaniqua,
main
she got an attitude.
Thing
I'm going to put that name
yeah.
over here.
Yeah.
You know, automatically judging you already because they look at the
exactly.
name.
Exactly.
And they don't think about the kid has a whole life that got to go with that name. They just go about what they think. Like you said, a trend. Oh, Ashanti sounds good. I'm going to name my child. Persephone or something. I don't know anything. Just a name. Chameleon. My name. My girl's Chameleon. She gonna be this way 1 minute, and the next minute she gonna change. I think that's funny.
You're speaking the wrong thing over your child's life, and that's not what, you know, names have meanings. And it's what you
they do have meanings.
You got to speak.
And I'm not saying go by the Bible, but yeah. Yeah, you put
know,
those names on people, it means something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It still means something. You know, do you want your child to be named Lexus? Oh, she's a four-wheel vehicle that everybody can ride. Like, no.
There you go.
Wow.
No.
Right.
You know, even certain biblical names, I knew my grandma stayed away, Vashti. My grandma, if I had named a child Vashti, she would have killed over. Because in the Bible, Vashti was not, that's not good. So she would have, she would have never gone for that. You know, because it truly has such value and such meaning behind what you say and what you call yourself.
Mm-hmm. And you look at some of the names that they used in the Bible, the personality of the person was in that name. Even though the person wasn't grown yet, you can see the personality that grew into that personality, the name that they gave that child. So, and I'm not trying to go biblical on it tonight, but, you know, just like the guy that betrayed, what was it, Judas that betrayed Jesus, you know, his whole purpose in life was to come and betray Jesus. Can you imagine that? That's the only reason why you was born was to do that. He was already damned to hell because he ended up killing himself anyway. So you already damned to hell. You grow. That's your only purpose in life is to come here and betray God and go. Anyway, I'm glad I wasn't him. That's all. But anyway, we'll get off of that. The literary world has changed a lot. And the only thing I challenge you all is to keep being true to yourself, like you said, and writing the way that you know and what you that's been working for you. And maybe when we talk to people that's coming up in the game, to try to let them say, okay, if you are going to write urban, at least try to put some meaning behind the urbanness and not just rewriting something because it's drug dealers or whatever, but maybe put a reason why that person is doing it, even though sometimes they put in there, well, that's the only way I can survive or whatever, but I don't know. I'm not trying to tell people how to write it. I'm just saying, let's give our people that's reading something more than just it sound good to be talking about that. Does that make sense? Not only with urban, but even in erotica. Don't just have it where you got this woman out here screwing everybody or this man, he's having sex with everyone. You know, just let's start looking at what we're putting out. If we want our world to get better in the African-American community, we got to be able to provide something for them. You know, like you said, we have the power to control the textile. That's why we get those commercials with the black music, because they know that we are controlling all this. If we was to actually really seriously say we want to stop and don't buy everything, that they would be crippled. The market would be crippled because they need the money that we're providing, even though they may not like our skin color or whatever. They still want our money.
Right, all about economics.
But we're dumb. We won't even black out for one day. They have this America, let's black out, and people won't do it. They still go to the store and buy stuff because they want it. I ain't doing that. Fuck it. I ain't got nothing to do with that. You know what I'm saying? And then the crab mentality, that's another story. That's a whole other show.
Oh.
That's a whole other show. And we see that in the literary world as well. How can you, I'm going to say this, I'm going to leave it alone. How can you be jealous of somebody that has a book out and you got a book out and you tell them, don't read their book, read mine? I mean, they can read more than one book, can't they?
Have you encountered that? I mean,
I have heard people are saying, where they're telling you don't read somebody else's stuff. Read mine because mine offers this and this and that or whatever. Why you want to read that? And get mad if you stuff like that.
I've never encountered that or whatever because basically I just don't get involved with all the little stuff that goes on. You know, I'm in here to write. I'm not about, you know, trying to make best friends and get in little cliques and do all that. So, but I mean, I've
heard. And mainstream kind of helped you a little bit with that as well because you don't have to deal with that too much in mainstream. I'm sure it's there, but it helped you.
Well, I think, I mean, I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I don't know if that helped or not. I mean, I think this is just mainly my personality is that I've never followed. I've never been the brown noser. I've never had to be part of a club or a group or whatever.
You didn't do that? Okay.
No. and still to this day, you know, I think it should be about, I mean, I'm not naive to think that it's only about the talent. I'm definitely not that naive because it is a combination of a lot of stuff. But still, I still think that bottom line, if you have a good product, that the readers will at some point finally figure it out, and you know, they'll come to you, they'll flock to you. So I don't think all this other stuff, like you're in little gangs or whatever, you know, is necessary. But I, you know, I hear the stories a lot. I do hear about stuff that's going on, little beefs or conflicts or something.
Yeah, it's out there.
So it's just really interesting.
It's there, and you just have to kind of rise above it and stay away from it, you know. And I do think because you are maybe probably more mainstream than, you know, what's more prevalent in the market today with the urban lit genre, that it's crazy. And, you know, there's a couple of us, we talk about it all the time. You know, we keep each other in check, like, hey, that ain't none of your business. Stay out of that because it's permanent, right? And they bring that same street mentality to the literary world, and it's like, can we be better than this? I know
right,
it's really
right.
stuff that we're writing about, but can we just be better than this? You know.
And I'm glad that you. Right. I'm glad you haven't experienced that, Alexa. Please.
No, I mean to be. I mean,
I'm glad you haven't.
You know, I really haven't. I mean, I've seen, you know, the clicks, of course. You know, that's very prevalent. I've seen that, but
yeah, you've seen the bigger side. Actually, you've seen the bigger, worse thing.
So no, I haven't. I haven't. So.
Yeah, you've seen the bigger side. The mainstream clicks. Yeah. At the National Book Conference and all that shit stuff. Excuse me. But I'm gonna go to one of those one year. I'm gonna set a booth up, even if it's in the back, even if I'm booth number 150. I'm gonna be there, and I just want to see just see what's going on with that, because I tell you, it's crazy.
A lot of that was she talking about the people,
you know how she was talking about a lot of the hate going on. A lot of times, I guess it's especially at that urban with the New York urban what is it Harlem book. Festival.
I have never been to the Harlem Book Festival. I have never gone.
All the people that's up there is mostly of color. So they're all selling most of the same kind of stuff. So they're going to do that. Why you want to buy that? Well, my story is harder than that.
Oh, my God. And I remember back in the day,
there
used to be, you know, certain festivals that you had to go to, and that was one of them. And there used to be, I think it was a Baltimore festival or something, but there were like at least three or four that you had to go to each year. If you didn't go to anything else, you had to go to those festivals, and I remember that was one of them. But from what I understand, it's not like it was back in the day.
No, it's not. It's changed so much because of the authors you have now. Like you said, you got the authors that come out now, they can put a 99-cent, they put all this work into it. I never understood why they would do this anyway. They put all this work into a book, take them 3 or 4 months to write, or a year, get it edited, hopefully, and all that stuff, and then you put it off at 99-cent. I just don't understand that. I know you're trying to get some people to read, but they do this, and then they get out here, and they go to these conferences like the Harlem Book Fair, and then they get a few people to follow them, and they think they get the big head, and then they start trying to tell people, oh, well, my book is this, and I don't know.
Wow.
it can get really ugly, it is that crowd mentality.
You can just be a better person to be ahead of that. Mm-hmm.
Just stay who you are, stay true to yourself.
The most important thing you said this evening was being true to yourself, and don't be worried about it. If you got a following, then be true to you and your following, and don't be worried about who's reading the other book.
Because
I mean, I know you don't worry about that, but there's people, they reading that book, they ain't gonna read mine. But how can they get so many reviews? Then they go out here and pay their friends and get these people to do these reviews and try to, you know, it's just crazy.
You mean they are paying for reviews?
They might be. I don't know what they're doing. Some of these books, I'm going to tell you, some of these books is out there. I don't know how they're getting these good reviews, 50, 100, 2,000, 3,000 reviews, and it'd be garbage.
I don't know how they do it. You just have to get to a position where you can kind of see behind the veil and be like, oh, no, this is so not good. So as far as I'm concerned, if I only sell 10 copies of what I write, I'm okay. If one of those 10 can speak to one person.
Exactly.
And do something for that person. Like I said earlier, you know, some of the things that I had written about, you know, one of my characters was dealing with a severe depression, and it was very debilitating for her. You know, she had basically shut down on her family. And I had a reader contact me, and that thing spoke so to her that she had to reach out and share her story with me. And that's the kind of stuff that's what's gratifying to me.
Yeah,
if I could touch one person.
Exactly.
You know, if I can make a difference in one person's life through what I'm writing, then I'm satisfied. Then I've achieved what God put me here to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's
what
really what it's all about.
That's all I want. And that's all I look for. I mean, you know, I'm not looking to get all these millions of stuff, you know. I mean,
no,
if it happens,
nice.
Fine. But
that would be really
if it
nice.
Happens,
but
I'm not going to turn it down.
Be nice. I'm not going
well, you know,
to
I'm not
going to
turn it down. If it happens, great. But I'm not going to go out there and dog somebody else because, you know, they read somebody else's book or whatever. You know, that's why, I mean, you got to finish a book eventually. You're going to want to pick up something else. So why not read them both? Why you can't
well,
read
think,
just
well,
why you just gotta
tell,
just read
I
mine.
I think that tells the true story though. I mean, I think that right there speaks for itself, is that if you're just passionate about what you do, I mean, you understand that, you know, there's
right.
a reader, there's enough readers to go around for everyone. And it's not just about your story, you know, it's about all these other stories that are out there. So just to be selfish and to try to that would be such a turnoff as for me coming from a reader to see two authors going at each other like that. And I haven't experienced that before, where they're actually going at each other and, you know, saying, get my book, that one's dirt or whatever. I mean, that is crazy, and that's not what it's about at all. I mean, that's not
then
at
you,
all
then
what it's
if
about.
You've seen that, then you've seen what we're talking about then, because that's what exactly
well, no,
what
I
it
haven't.
Is.
That's what I'm saying. I haven't seen
oh,
that
yeah,
before. I've never
yeah, they're
seen
doing
that before.
It.
But, well, that would be a turnoff to me as a reader.
Erotic
I'm
enough
both,
for you.
You know, I love to read as well. And I probably
right. that
would
book
not
ain't
get
erotic enough. Right. That book's not erotic enough. You want to see something sexy, you get this one. I tell
no,
you, it's sex is off the chain. Oh, yeah. You know.
That's a turnoff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got some people that's weak-minded that way, and that's what they do. They go by that. You know, and then I can, a whole other show is talk about the people that actually give you reviews. I think that they need to come up with a better way to do that, not because I got bad reviews or anything like that. I'll take a review, bad, good, or whatever. I'll take it because to me that helps me get better. But the thing is you got these dog in your books and they haven't written anything and they don't even know anything about it, but they want to put all this bad press out about different books. Not only, I'm not talking about me personally, I'm just talking about just stuff. Or they'll get somebody, you know, everybody has their own opinion. It's so opinion-based. You know, it's you know, you might like something that somebody else don't like, but if they don't like it, then they're going to give you 3 stars or whatever, or
mm-hmm.
give that person 2 stars because they didn't like a certain way it went. You know, I mean, I don't – and you got people out there that's trying to do that, just want to slam people. That's what
right.
they do, go out and try to find books to slam. I just don't understand that. I don't understand why people do that. And then you got people that's reading. They're going out here checking these books out. They're going to go buy what they read on the review.
Uh-huh.
I just wish there was a better way of doing that so that people could make their own mind up on what they want to read. But unfortunately, there isn't.
Not at this point in time. And the reviews are very, very important, very important. But unfortunately,
yeah.
that's the way they're done.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna tell you, I really appreciate you girls coming on the show, and Alecta, you stayed here almost all the way until the end. Wow.
I know.
I said I was gonna
check out a little earlier, but the conversation
did.
Was so interesting that that I.
Well, I'm
I
glad
did
you
stay
stayed
to
because
the end.
We try to keep it like that, you know, and I didn't cuss that much, so I think I think that helped you stay too. And, Troy, I'm glad you came. I'm glad to meet you. And anytime you guys want to come on, you know you can just contact me, and you can come on the show. We'll get you on. We'll get you in. It's not a problem. you know, even if you just want to come in and say, I got this new book coming out, blah, 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 I'm going to be at this book signing, blah, 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 whatever, it doesn't matter. Just let me know. Yeah, I, you know, I always open the door that way because I'm not that selfish like some people with some shows. You know, you can come on. It's not a problem. And let me know, like, when your book, you're ready to come out, when you do get that deal again and get back out there the way you want to, Electa, you make sure you let me know so we can get you on here.
I definitely will. But in the meantime now, I do have books out there. I do have my backlist.
So readers, I just want to put it out there
that they can check
out.
When Baldwin Love Brendan, please check that out. Please check out Full Figured Six. My story is called Black Widow, and Eric Pete as well is in that particular anthology. So check them out, write your reviews, and let me know what you think. And you can check me out. I'm on Facebook under my name, Electa Rome Parks. I also have my personal website under my name. ElectaRomeParks.com. And so I'm all over the internet. Just Google my name and you'll be able to find all my books. And so please support me, and I appreciate
it. So was your mother thinking about the Eastern Stars when she named you, or what? What was she? Electa?
No. Actually, my dad named me, but no.
You sure? He might have been a past patron or something. He might have been in a Mason or something. You know, I mean, I don't know anybody else in the world named Electa.
No, I know the story, and it has nothing to do with the Eastern Stars. It has nothing to do with the Eastern Stars. But at least you're saying Electa, not Electra. So, you know, that's my little
tip. Yeah, we didn't put an R in there. No.
Yeah, a lot of people.
And I'm sure you get that. Hey, Electra, what's going on? I bet in school they just dogged you with that one, huh?
Yeah, forever.
Okay. So, Troy, how can they get you? How can they get you?
I am on Facebook. My books are available on Amazon. The series is called Wife Tales. So far we're three into the series, so there are three episodes to the Wife Tales series. And I am on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So on Facebook, I'm just Troy Fields, Troy with an I, not a Y. So I'm a female Troy, not a man.
There you go. Yep.
In case people got confused by the sound of the voice. And then on Twitter and Instagram is Fields of Troy. So all one word, Fields of Troy with an I, and that's how people can connect with me. I'm always around, and I'm very reachable and accessible, and I enjoy interacting with readers and the fans, and, I get joy from that, you know, talking to them about the characters in the book and what they hope to see happen and different things. So, I enjoy it.
And that's what I really like is talking about the characters, man. When they treat them characters like real people, and how did they – I don't understand why she did this. When you get your people talking to you about – your fans talking to you about your characters like that, that just turns me on completely. Makes me feel proud to be writing.
Yeah, that's really, like, really priceless when they're really talking like these are real people.
Like they're real.
And they're having a conversation. You know, that's amazing when it happens. Because then you know that you have really wrote something that has really touched them, that they think that these people, or at least they're treating them like they're real. So that's really, like, magic.
Right. Okay, well, what I'm going to do right now, because we've got, like, 6 minutes, I'm going to give you guys a chance both to say your last little words, and then we're going to go ahead and let you go.
Okay.
So what do you have? You have a phrase or anything you want to leave us with, Electa, or something, or whatever?
I'll give a few words of advice.
Of wisdom?
Words of wisdom. You know, I've been in the industry for a while now, so to all the aspiring authors out there, what I would tell you is first of all, would be to never give up, to network, find a mentor in the industry, study your craft, and I would probably say that's the main one, study your craft.
Right, study your craft.
And just continue no matter what happens, no matter what anybody says, always follow your dream. And I'm Electa Rome Parks. Thank you.
There you go. All right. Now, Troy, what do you have for us?
I was like an Electa speech. I'm Electa Rome Parks. Thank you. I love it. I'm I love it. I just love it. not much. Just don't be afraid. Just, you know, if you really have a passion for the craft, just to step out there on faith. You know, if it's something that's been placed in you, your gift will make room for you. It will definitely open up doors. And people will see the gift even when you don't see it, because that's basically how it happened for me. I knew it was there, but I was not trying to put myself out there. And I had someone came along and pulled it out of me and told me this is what you're going to do because it's in you. So sometimes, you know, it takes that person to come along and say, hey, I know you can do this, and I'm going to, you know, help get you there. And I appreciated that person, and I will, you know, forever be grateful to him for that. You know, and just, you know, follow your passion. And if it's something that you're really passionate about, it's no way you can go wrong. You know, and
I know that's right.
And, you know, make sure you
Well, one thing I want to say is I'm glad that you, both of you beautiful ladies, came on the show tonight and spent time with me. So I'm going to let you go right now. But don't be afraid to come back, okay?
Thank you so much.
Okay,
I've enjoyed
thank
it.
You.
All right, okay.
Take care.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, good night.
Bye-bye, good night.